This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Choreographer Chuck Davis passed away earlier this month. He was 80 years old. Baba Chuck, as he was fondly called, was an integral part of the cultural fabric in the Triangle. He and his African-American dance ensemble performed at local festivals and in venues beyond North Carolina. He was known all over the world as the American Grandmaster of African dance. He often dressed in elaborate West African attire, and his charisma and energy were infectious. A few years back, we spent an hour getting to know Chuck Davis and hearing about his life. Today, we bring you that conversation, and perhaps nothing could better illustrate his exuberance and enthusiasm than his response to my greeting.
Peace and blessings, Frank, and thank you. And of course, as is my rule, I wish to extend greetings to all of your listening audience, and we know they extend around the globe. So everyone, buenos dias. To everyone, bonjour. To everyone, quesadilla. To everyone, sumole. And assalamu alaikum. And it goes on and on and on.
It goes on and on and on, and it has gone on and on for you for lo these many years, and it all began in Raleigh, North Carolina. Tell us, in the 1950s.
Raleigh. I love it. It is the city of my birth, and my father is, African-American, and my mom was Cherokee. And so I have all of the earth, blood running through my veins. And my mom made the transition when I was four. My dad remarried, so I have actually two moms. I have my birth mom, and I had my raised mom. And my father was a cement worker, cement finisher, and he poured concrete all over the country until I was born. And the minute I came into the world, he said his running back and forth was over. He had to be there, as you know, for my upbringing.
That cemented his future, I suppose, is what you're saying.
Oh, yes. And I am a product of Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm sorry, but I was not abused in any way by anybody,
There are support groups, actually, for people like you who just never had any trauma to report and feel left out.
Right. And I loved it because we lived in, and the old saying, it takes a village or community to raise a child. And that's what we were accustomed to in the area in North Carolina, in Raleigh, where I grew up until I was, five or six? We never had indoor plumbing. We had to still use the outhouse and everything. Sears catalog became, it served a dual purpose, and it was, it served a dual purpose.
Your commentary on consumerism, I understand.
Right.
So tell us, but it was, you may not have been abused in the family and the community life that you talk about sounded nurturing for you, but it also was a time of the segregated South growing up there. Did you feel that?
Yes. I mean, we went through the area just above us on the other side of the cemetery was called Carolee. And we had to deal with the taunts, from the kids who would come down to the edge of the ballpark and they would scream that infamous word and throw stones and whatnot. And there were one or two incidents like the old Kreskies go inside and it was black fountain, colored and white. Colored and white. We had to experience that. The Ambassador Theater, we go to the movies. We had to climb 19 stories to the top. By the time you reached the top, your popcorn was cold. And I remember one time my mom was born in Vidalia, Georgia. And we took the train down and we get off the train. But even in Raleigh, in the store in our neighborhood, you go in, you buy what you wanted to, and you pay for it, and you left. Those little peanut bars, logs, I went in to get it, and I heard the infamous word, get out of here. And naturally, being from Raleigh, and when his tone of voice, even at 9 years, I knew a few words, and I answered him in a few words, but I reckoned without my mom. My mom, boy, she put a smack on the back of my head, and she said, boy, get out of here. You know you don't belong in coming in this door. And she said she wasn't upset about that. She was upset about the words I used because she wanted to know, where did I learn them? Who taught it to me? And so forth and so on. But even at that, you know, we got over it because I had a strong community coming up. We had teachers from the Washington School who made their way through our community at the end of the day. So if either one of us did something wrong, they were there to discuss it and talk with the parents about it. So we could not go home with a mouthful of lies.
Even if you picked up a few profanities along the way. When did you pick up a love for dance? When did you start wanting to dance?
Oh, my goodness. I was coming out of the military. I had gone through high school, and I had seen the Hoochie Coochie dancers at the state fair. And you know, when they came out to do that, you know, the show to get you to come in and witness what they had to offer. We had the Jabberwock at the high school, and, you know, we had our drum majorettes who did their routine. You know, we saw them. But that was it. And when I was in the services, I was stationed at Bainbridge.
You were in the Navy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was in the Navy. And we had that was through a special program. 2 years in reserve to learn nomenclature, 2 years active, and then 2 years reserve and over. And it was while there, stationed at Bethesda, I worked in the tower, which means we had duty from 8 in the morning until 4 until 3:59 in the afternoon. Afterwards, we kept civilian clothes on the base. We could dress in civilian clothes and go into D.C. And we used to do that. And up in the black neighborhood, they had the Dunbar Hotel. In the basement of the Dunbar Hotel was the nightclub. And it featured Roland Covey and his Latin American all-stars. And only Maria Rodriguez was Latino. Everybody else was black American. And that's where salsa for me, well, now it's called salsa, but then it was mambo and cha-cha-cha and merengue and rumba. And we were there, and on Sunday afternoons, they used to feature Suicide Mambo. And that means only the best dancers were allowed to hit the floor when Suicide Mambo was played. So when I vowed, I would stand on the sideline and I'm working my routine and my shoulders are going and I'm watching Gene Early and I'm watching Paul Hawkins because they were the champions. They were the dancers of the era. There came this one Sunday when Gene's partner wasn't there. And Gene hit the floor and she turned. She said, Chuck Davis, come on. Boy, let me tell you, water ran down my leg and everything. My shoulders went back. I says, I'm a Capricorn, born January the 1st. I'm going to hit this floor. Whatever happens, happens. But I'm a quick study. So I had watched Paul Hawkins and I had seen the movements and the choreography he did with it. So I added a little bit of my own, and we went this way, and we tipped that way, and yada-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And see, Suicide Mambo is fast. You cannot stop to breathe. You kept going no matter what until that da-da-da-da. Yeah. And on the da-da-dee-da, everybody applauded and everything. And I stumbled to the side after thanking Gene, right? Because up to that time when Suicide Mambo was on, only the best dancers were there. So, but then because I danced with the queen, then I could hit the floor every time Suicide. And I've been jumping around ever since. But that was strictly social. The professional part didn't come until later.
The late Chuck Davis, speaking with us in September of 2010. The choreographer and founder of the African American Dance Ensemble passed away this month. Just ahead, we'll hear more about how Chuck's professional career took off and how he moved from salsa to African dance. And you'll hear it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. We're continuing our conversation with choreographer Chuck Davis, who passed away this month at the age of 80. He was the founder of the internationally acclaimed African American Dance Ensemble. Today we bring you a conversation we had with Chuck Davis almost 7 years ago. He lived in Durham for decades, but his career really took off in New York City after he met a famed Nigerian drummer. I asked him about his encounter with Babatunde Olatunji.
During the late 50s and early 60s, Tunji was all over the place. He was just coming out of Morehouse. He decided to form his own African orchestra. And as a result, you know, traditional African music and that beat was just, you know, gaining popularity. And Tunji showed on the scene. And, you know, people were, because of the beat and the colorful everything, here he comes. And so much so that he was opening for James Brown. And he would open for James Brown. And then, you know, they would move to the side and so forth. And during that time at the Howard Theater, I would be backstage because I wanted to, you know, just say, hey, how are you, and greeting and so forth and so on. And as a result, you know, I got to know Tunji and Philip and Lorna and everybody in the company. At the same time, things were happening in D.C. Ronnie Lewis, Ernestine Moss, and I decided we would form our own trio after I made my debut. No, I'm sorry, not debut, my debut, you know, at the Casbah in D.C. And to make a long story short, they were having an international night with the emphasis on Africa. Invitations had been sent to every African embassy, and 90% of them had responded to attend this grand performance at the Casbah, where Roland Covey was featured, but they also had Larry and Richardson and his Afro-Cuban group. We were there, and I used to go and watch rehearsals. On the night of this big reception, something happened to Larry's auto. They were in an accident as he was picking up dancers, and they could not make it back in time. Most of the dancers and musicians were there. The decision was the show must go on. So they said, Chuck Davis, remember that section where Ernestine leaps across the floor and jumps into Larry's arms? I say, yeah. You stand there, and she's going to come and leap, and you just turn, sit her down, and she'll go into the next section. I said, okay. So I was there, and see, in those days, I had a waistline like 31. That was many tons of macaroni and cheese ago, so that's gone. But we, you know, so I did it. The rhythm was hot. It was going. Ernestine did her movement, and she ran, and she came through the air. I caught her, but instead of just sitting her down, I decided that I was going to dance with her. So Ernestine and I were all over the floor. I put her down, and then I went off stage. And the worst thing in the world happened. Applause. There was tons of applause. That's it. The head grew. Vroom. Just like this. I mean, it grew. And so afterwards, after the recovery, he came in and he heard what had happened. He meaning, you know, Richardson, the director and choreographer. And he said, we'll keep it in. So you in. Now, keep it in mind, I had never had a dance lesson or class, just blood and guts. So because of it being Afro-Cuban dance and styles, I wanted to know what I was doing. There was no information in any books anywhere. So I had to rely on talking to the old people about dance and what it is and the rhythms. They suggested I take a ballet class. So I went to Miss Bernice Hammond's ballet studio. Mm-hmm. And I'm there, and I hear all these little kids about 3 feet high. And here I am, 6 feet five. The first two classes, I was fine. Here comes the next class. And they had the kids doing these, doing Shanae's. And I'm looking and I'm saying, oh my Lord, I did one Shanae and my leg knocked this little girl about 40 feet.
You have to tell me what I that said, is. So that's forgive it. Me for not knowing what that is. Now, Shanae,
Shanae is the turn where you spot and you step and you're turning and you continue moving across.
6'5", and you're rolling around the room like that.
And this poor little girl, and she let the world know that someone had bumped her. So I says, okay, no, I'll go to Miss Clara Harrington. So I went to Miss Clara Harrington's studio for jazz and tap. And I must credit Miss Harrington, God rest her soul, she has passed on. You know, my fifth position was like this because
you got
this
your hands
was
over,
where
you got your
her
hands
studio,
over.
the ceiling in her studio.
So fifth position,
right?
Your hands should be straight up, right?
Right, they should be like this.
Okay, so a little arc over the top of
but
your head here.
It's like this.
Now it's
because
touching your forehead.
Here was her ceiling, you know. And I was dancing with my shoulders hunched because she was only 4'10". And I didn't have that motivation. Yeah. Now, while all this was happening, I was at Howard in the dance department and theater department. And Jeffrey Holder came to town. Jamaica was on Broadway. It had closed. And Jeffrey and Barbara Wright, who was from Washington, and with Jones and Haywood Dance Studio, Barbara Wright decided to open her own studio. Jeffrey came down to teach master classes. And you know, at that point, Jeffrey was at that era and time where he dressed in all white. Everything was white. And he had this attitude about him that was commanding. And his voice was there. And I was... everything was like this. This man was a griot. He was a guru. He was a god because he came in. I took his class, and the first thing he said, Chuck Davis, straighten your back. Because, you know, I've been hunching all this time. So I lifted out of it. He said, I must dance from the center. I must encompass the world. And I understood, and it has been moving. He is my mentor even today, and moving forward and forward and forward. And we were on the Howard's campus, and Tunji was at the Howard Theater. So we went down to be with Tunji. At the ballroom was Nana Denny Zulu. He would come with his African dancers, musicians and singers. So I'm getting this introduction to all of these, you know, this different dance. And that's when Ernestine, Ronnie, and I decided to form our trio. This had to have been about 61. And we formed our La Delemo trio because we didn't know what to call ourselves. We wanted to be exotic. So we took the first two letters of our last names and put it together.
But this all has an emphasis on African rhythms. Now, you're thinking more about African dance in particular, in part because of Tunji's...
But at this point, it was more Afro-Cuban, more Afro-Cuban because of the, you know, of the source and the support rhythms that were coming through with the kungas and the ashiko drums. And, you know, moving forward in time... We became one of the highest paid trios in the Washington, D.C. area, and we were very popular, moving all over the place. On the night of the March on Washington, We were performing as headliners at the Crow's Toe, which was a coffee house. And you know, in that time, coffee houses, well, y'all wouldn't know because you're too young, but you know, the coffee houses, the coffee houses were in vogue, and we were performing at the Crow's Toe. And earlier in the season, we had, you know, told Tunji, if you come to the March on Washington, afterwards, please come to see us, because we knew we would be there. He showed up with an entourage, and we danced. I'm going to tell you, we gave them. Our costumes were cut so low that what they didn't show, they pointed at, you see. And we were kicking and everything. And afterwards, instead of, you know, the entourage leaving, Tunji decided to stay because he said he wanted to see us again. And we performed again. And afterwards, he said, if you get to New York, insofar as I'm concerned, you have auditioned. You have a job in my company. His assistant choreographer and director of the dancers was Lorna Hodges. That was Johnny Hodges' daughter with Duke Ellington. And she encouraged, she and Peggy Kirkpatrick and Philip Stamps, God rest their soul, Peggy and Lorna are still with us, but Philip has passed on. They encouraged us to come. Ronnie had just met a new partner. He said he wasn't going anywhere. From what I've learned, they are now real estate barons in the D.C. area. Ernestine was a grade 5 in the government. She says, no, 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 no. I'm not losing my medical benefits. So that left the Capricorn. I says, okay, I'm going. I can survive on a can of sardines and two boxes of crackers for 2 days. No problem. I jumped that Trailways bus. I hit New York on Monday. Tuesday, we went into rehearsals Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I had to learn 6 complete Olatunji ballets. We did it, and on Saturday, I'm standing there for making my grand debut. Saturday. I'm over on stage right, ready to pounce on the stage, and every one of those ballets all ran together. Everyone, every combination. I said, oh, I'm just gonna die. Of course, they're gonna laugh me off the stage. I broke into hives. And I'm standing there and physically I'm trembling. And a very soothing voice, and an arm went around my shoulder, and a soothing voice says, oh, young brother, you know, relax. Everything is going to be all right. Everything is going to be all right. And I calmed down immediately. The drums started. I heard my cue. I went on stage. I made 90 mistakes. Everybody thought they were wrong because I was grinning all over the place. I was dancing and grinning and having myself a ball. And the man who calmed me down was Malcolm X. Because Tunji used to open for Malcolm when he was with the Fruit of Islam, the Nation of Islam, and we were at the Armory. And that was my debut into the African dance world. And it went on from there, and we performed with Tunji all over the country and into the World's Fair. And that was adventure beyond adventure. We were 20 minutes on, 20 minutes off, 20 minutes on, 20 minutes off. And it was a learning experience, Frank, because we had troops coming from the continent. We had troops coming from the continent. Up to that point, we studied with Asadada Defour. We studied with Nana Dene Zulu, with Olatunji, with Solomon Ilori. We had studied with Mama Pearl Primus. We had studied with Catherine Dunham and Lucille Ellis. We studied with Oh, it just goes on and on.
But these are people here. Now people are coming from the continent and they're recontextualizing, giving you a whole new sense of what that is. I want to just for a moment play some of the music from Olatunji just to give everybody a sense of what we're hearing now, because it was making a scene back in the early 60s. This is something that was new on the scene, at least nationally. And I want to hear what you're listening to that's becoming part of your transformation. Odunde, Olatunji, and his dance troupe. This is a, tell us about that song and about that dance.
The Odunde is a celebration of the new year, of the new yam. And the Odunde is where you pay homage to the earth and where you pay homage to the omnipotent force, because Tunji is a Christian, was, God rest his soul, a Christian. So many of the songs and chants we would learn would be to the earth, but also recognizing the all-merciful creator. And that was done all in white, and the movements of the arms, you know, were very liquid like the waves coming in, paying homage to Obatala, which is one of the Orishas from Nigeria, and Yemanja, who is mother of the waters.
There's something in it for you. You're performing all this, and clearly I can see your eyes light up. You jumped out of your chair. had to get you back down here so we could finish the conversation. But what happens when these dances, these community events that have such importance in their native land are then performed for an audience? It's a whole new way to present.
Oh, Frank, it's a huge, huge, huge difference. That's why in my teaching, I remind everyone that when you are studying dance from another culture, it is not ethnic what you're learning and studying. It's authentic movements, but not ethnic. It is only ethnic when it is shared and not performed, when it is shared in the area of origin. Once it goes 1 foot out of that area, it becomes theater. Because we had to take that whole Odunde festival, which is sometimes 2 and 3 weeks, with the celebration of the yams, with the celebration of, you know, like of the different cultures, and it depended on the area where you're from. But we had to make those dances 20 minutes, 25 minutes, 15 minutes, and then sometimes even 7 minutes, depending on the venue. So you might do authentic movements and choreography, but it is theater. It is not ethnic unless you are there on the land in the area where that dance originated.
And at the appropriate time of year too.
Right.
So great artistic and creative growth now for you. What about, is your consciousness changing? You're now thinking about things. I mean, these are conscious efforts to reprise and to perform the dance of Africa, the continent. What's happening to you in your consciousness and your understanding of who you are?
I'm learning. Everything. Well, we know that every person, Frank, is placed on this earth to fulfill a certain niche, N-I-C-H-E. And many people will go through their entire life and never, ever fulfill any of their goals. Mine, thanks be to the all-merciful creator, was to be a communicator. And the best way to communicate is through dance, because dance has a language that is universal. You can, if you're a dancer, you can get by on in every area of this planet. You can get by and you can enjoy and you can learn. Because the first thing you do is you learn to sit at the feet of the elders, and you listen and you learn as their words pour into your being. Now, as their words are pouring into your being, then you're able to visualize. You take this vision when you stand up, and the elders will correct the movement so that everything is in place. And once you've learned it, it becomes yours, and you pay homage to that elder and to the area or place where you've learned. That was happening to me. And I was learning, and I was getting involved in dance on every level.
The late Chuck Davis. He passed away this month at the age of 80. You're listening to a conversation we had with him in 2010. Just ahead, we'll hear more about Chuck's time at Juilliard and his career in teaching. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Acclaimed choreographer Chuck Davis passed away this month. We spoke with him a number of times on this show. Today we hear an extended conversation we had with him in 2010. After becoming an internationally known dancer and choreographer, he became an integral part of the Triangle culture scene. I asked him about his early years in New York and how he snuck into classes at the Juilliard School.
Let me see, there's so many things that happen, you know, all along there about the same time, because when I was dancing with Tunji, Lorna Hodges was the in charge of the dancers and dance captain. And Lorna was enrolled at Juilliard along with John Parks and Dudley Williams, and the list goes on and on and on. So I was running with the dancers, and one day they took me by and I sat and I watched, you know, them in class. And at that time, it's like I said, you know, I had the 30-inch waistline, the long legs. So I put on my tights. I haven't worn any since. I put on my tights, my leotard, and I went to class with Lorna.
You're sneaking into class.
I just walked right in. I sat down, and it was Mary Hinkson. Mary Hinkson teaching Graham. And I learned all of the Graham, you know, positions, each one of those sections. I learned one, Graham two, Graham three, four, and five. And I would go every morning. In the afternoon, Louis Hoyce, you know, who is probably, God rest his soul, was one of the most fantastic minds in this universe. You heard these statements about someone who can read a phone book and make it come alive. Mm. That was his ability, only his was sharing of knowledge. And he was about students learning about dance, but also learning about life. And I gained so much. And they never called the roll until this one day when Mary Hinkson had to call the roll. I was sitting next to the door. Before she could get to the D's, I was gone.
But right?
But it was the learning experience. Yeah. And I took, you know, what I was learning there and, you know, and became a part of sharing at the American Dance Festival. I mean, at the World's Fair. From the World's Fair, I spent time with Elio Pomare, God rest his soul, he's passed on, with Movements Black, learning modern and working and working and working and just, you know, keeping it going. Jose Limon, I was there working and learning his choreography. Formation of the Chuck Davis Dance Company in 1967. And then 1972, I went to Caribe Festa and learned all about traditions from the Caribbean and from the Latin American companies. And that's when the Chuck Davis Dance Company was invited by Charles Reinhardt and then Stephanie Reinhardt to be in residency at the American Dance Festival at Connecticut College. We were there, and we shared traditions. And then if your dance company was there and classes were going, we could go in and stand in the back and take classes. And it was, Bella Lewinsky. Oh, this woman, she had the power to teach. She could make this microphone stand up, do triple turns and hit the earth and keep right on going. So we were learning the Horton technique. We were learning Graham. We were learning everything. And at the same time, we were sharing traditions as I had learned at the World's Fair from dancers from Burundi, from Cote d'Ivoire, from South Africa, from Nigeria, all of the Sierra Leone. We had learned all of these dances, the meaning behind the movement. So we were doing authentic, and we were teaching and sharing. And at no point ever, and still to this day, did I reach a level where, oh, that's it. I can stop learning now. No, never, ever.
To the point that you've gone to Africa, too. You were learning all that from companies that came here, but then you decided to go to Africa.
There we go, in 1977, because I was learning, but I still did not have the African soil between my toes. Mm. You see, I didn't have that dust rising when we dance, when you dance on the dusty earth in commemoration of whatever festive, then it comes up and that dust becomes a part of your life. 1977 was my very first trip to Africa. Senegal was my port of call. And I went in, there were dancers there, there were musicians. We stayed at Ngor Village. And it was a fantastic experience. Round trip, breakfast for 7 days. Round trip, breakfast, dinner, lodgings at this four-star resort area only cost $345.
Times have changed, Chuck.
Tell me about it.
What was different about it? Did you notice right away? Could you feel a difference on the continent when you were watching dance from what you had learned from troops that had come to the U.S.?
Yeah, because when they as they came in, they were sharing choreography. And once you get out to the village and the community, they're sharing traditions. And that's where we were able to get into the ethnic, part of my learning, because I was able to see it as it was presented with and learning and knowing the role of the elders, knowing the role of the next in line, right on down to the youth, who once the elders, if the elders were dancing in the center ground, all of the youth would either stand on the side or kneel. We had all this learning that was coming forth, and many of the things that we had been taught by Mama Pearl Primus, by Tunji and all of them. They had vocalized it, but now we were able to visualize it because we were right there. We were able to reach out and touch the elders and to sit at their feet and get that dust coming in. And we had the traditional rhythms coming from the source. When you were in Senegal and you were dancing with the Wolof, you had your Wolof drums. When we went to Ghana and you were dancing Ghanaian techniques, you have all the different style drums there to produce the sound. Here, okay, Frank.
I'm going to ask you a question. How does that affect you as a choreographer? Because you said you don't reprise, you don't redo what you learned there, and that wasn't your intention, but somehow you internalize it and it shows up. How? What happens to you as a choreographer after that?
Once you learn it, it becomes a part of you. And that support system, you have to seek it out. So you get rhythms that aren't necessarily authentic, but as close to it as you possibly can. Because as we said earlier, there are points where you wish to share. For instance, a naming ceremony that starts at 5 o'clock in the morning, just before sunrise, from Senegambia, when the elders come. And as the sun is coming up, the elders are saying all the prayers. And they lift the child. And that scene from Roots where he says, "Behold, the only thing greater than yourself." And he's showing him to the universe and all that. And the festivities go on all day, way into the night. We do a naming ceremony now in 20 minutes or 25 minutes. You see, so we had to have the authentic rhythms and not able to have a battery of drums. We have drums that are indigenous to the area, which can produce the rhythm patterns that we need to fulfill whatever the choreography and, you know, and the inspiration that comes with it.
Well, it seems to me a good example of that collaboration was when you worked with the Carolina Chocolate Drops and set some choreography. You did some choreography of Bluegrass, Brown Earth.
Yes.
I want to hear a little bit of that, and we'll talk about it. Carolina Chocolate Drops, Gambia, a collaboration with Chuck Davis, my guest this hour. Tell us about that collaboration.
Oh, fabulous. Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready.
I'm glad.
Okay. You know, once I became aware of them at the Eno, you know, I became a devotee. I was following them, you know, everywhere. And they were performing, they did the Eno, but they were performing right here at the, to your listening audience, I'm at the Tobacco Warehouse, and there's another section in Durham, North Carolina. There's another section over in the Arts District. Yes, we do have an Arts District
sure
in Durham.
Do.
Thank you very much. And the Carolina Chocolate Drops were performing outside, and I was there, and afterwards, they were doing a performance at the High School of Science and Math. I attended the performance, and afterwards, doing question and answer as we were talking, I learned that Rihanna was going to the Gambia to study. They were having a conference on the akanting. The akanting is the great ancestor of the banjo. So they were there to discover those roots. And I jumped up and down because I'm the director of the Cultural Art Safari. Every summer we go to Africa to have a hands-on experience, learning about traditional dance, music, cooking. That's why I can't wear no size 30 anymore, right? And there, and we, you know, we talked and so forth. So we said we would see each other in the Gambia. Schedules are so tight when we go until, it wasn't until about a week into our stay there that we found each other. She was studying in Mandanare, which is the home of the akanting, and I was over in Fajukunda, you know, with the Jolas. But we got together at the hotel in Konu, where we were, and they were having an outdoor performance and everything. So we came together and learning more about the traditions of the akanting, and that gave support to and the rise to the creativity for Bluegrass, Brown Earth, because of the banjo, and we talked about it. And when I returned home, we got together, and she helped. She not helped, but she did the music for that section. You just heard singing, that's the music from the akanting. The akanting, that's the rhythm and the chant that she learned. We used it and featured her in Bluegrass, Brown Earth. We had clogging, we had step dancing, we had traditional Jola rhythms. All of this at the grand production and finale brought everybody together in that grand old African-American production line.
Well, I was going to say, your company now and you are devoted to teaching, to doing workshops. You're in full dress today because I think you've done workshops. Where did you go?
We were at the Louisville Middle School, Leesville Middle School this morning.
How important is it to keep these traditions? And in a way, you're not keeping traditions. You're teaching traditions to people who have never known this stuff, and it's not part of their history.
Frank, it's vitally important. It's vitally important that I share with you my heritage, because in sharing with you my heritage, then you immediately come back with something from your heritage, and as we talk and move and so forth, at one point it all comes together. It all comes together. I am quite fortunate. I was in Chicago directing the Dance Africa Festival there, and we were showing the African influence on Mexican music and dance. And then I come home, and there's the Del Pueblo Festival, and there was a fantastic group of young dancers, you know, who are here, who are there in Raleigh, but they are maintaining their culture.
Now, Chuck, I've got a minute left.
Has the time gone that quickly?
And I want to ask you about coming back to Durham, coming back to the Raleigh area, because you followed ADF back and then started your American African-American dance company right here. What's that been like?
Coming out of the American Dance Festival by way of Mont Pinckney at Central, and taking, you know, this beautiful energy, and with Mama Jean and Norma and Ngoma and Bradley Simmons and Ava, who is now the director at Duke's African Dance Division, and Sharom, who is the director up at Appalachia, and my niece Marie, everybody here. And it is Miss Ray, who was then at Duke, made me an offer I couldn't refuse. And I'm here. We have the African American Dance Ensemble is now known around the world, but we want to be known some more. So if you all are out there, come on down and invite us in. Yes, Frank, and we listen to you every day. Okay,
bless
I'll
you.
Talk fast.
Bless you, and will you bless us with your farewell?
Okay, peace, love, respect for everybody, for the elders, and especially for the earth. And know that all of us are here for a purpose. Find yours, because it is about sharing. Give thanks.
Chuck Davis, we thank you. We're grateful for your presence with us these many years, for your art that gave the world so much joy, for showing us the many gifts we've received from the African continent and diaspora, and for giving us the confidence to share our own gifts with the world around us. Choreographer Chuck Davis died this month at the age of 80. And you've been listening to a conversation we had with him in 2010. You can find out more about Chuck Davis and our show at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton-Ormond, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brooklyn. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.